State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh, all ye having business with this honorable court, and ye shall be heard. God save the State of Nebraska and this honorable court.
Thank you. You may be seated. Good morning to everyone, and thank you to everybody here at Creighton University for hosting the court today. We will begin with introductions from members of the court. I am Mike Havikin, and I am the Chief Justice, and now by order of seniority as to service on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller-Lerman.
William Castle, good morning.
Stephanie Stacy, good morning.
Good morning, I am Jeff Funk.
I'm Jonathan Pappett, good morning.
And John Frydenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Our first case this morning is In Re Guardian and Conservatorship of Veronica B. Counsel, you may approach your counsel tables. Mr. Carney, good morning to you. And is it Ms. Van Baron?
Van Balen, yes.
Van Balen, good morning to you. And Mr. Walden?
Yes.
Good morning to you. Do any counsel have any questions before we begin? Very good. Then Mr. Carney, you may approach and you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Joel Carney. May it please the court. I represent Ron Brewer, and he is the conservator of the case of Veronica Brewer, who is the conservator representing the case. He is actually the successor or the conservator that replaced another previous conservator. In 2017, Judge Huber from the Douglas County District Court entered an order approving a settlement that was reached between Farm Bureau and also Mr. Brewer. So today we're asking the court to reverse that order to vacate. On March 4th, the Douglas County County Court entered an order denying our motion to vacate.
You said the district court approved the original settlement. It was the county court.
It was the county court. Sorry, I misspoke.
That's all right.
And that occurred when?
So
that first order?
The first order happened in September 2017. And
was there a hearing, or how did that process proceed?
An application was filed in July of 2017, and at that time the matter was set for hearing. There was a hearing at that time, just the then conservator and the court, and the application was made laying out the facts of the settlement.
That settlement was with one of the parties responsible? Okay.
Yes, but not the other. And the application itself that is in the record provides for the terms of the settlement, but also contemplated further liability determinations for the other tortfeasor, which was School Bus Transportation of America.
Is that on the document?
It's on the document as filed with the court, yes.
The settlement that was approved says there's going to be more lawsuits against other potential liable parties?
Yes. But subsequent to that, that settlement was finalized in September of 2017.
I want to back you up to a second. You were talking about the county court authorizing the conservator to settle the claim against one of multiple tortfeasors, correct?
Correct.
What were the terms of that release? Was it a special? The order looks like the court approved a Perringer release. What is a Perringer release, and what are the traits of a release like that?
So basically that lays out the settlement, delineates the amount to be paid by the insurance company, and also allows for other liability as it between all the parties involved.
Preserves the claim against the non-settling tortfeasor?
Correct.
And then is there an indemnification provision with the settling tortfeasor?
There can, yes, there is. Yes.
And so the injured party here in the release agreed to indemnify the settling tortfeasor against any claims for contribution or indemnity, correct?
That's correct.
All right.
So was there, at that hearing, was there evidence taken? Do we have that record before us?
We have, so there's no bill of exceptions in this case. There's only the transcript that is before the court. So the entire evidence that was before the court at that time is not before you today.
There seemed to be some indication that the county court erred in 2017 in approving that settlement. What responsibility or duty does the county court have in approving or disapproving of the settlement?
Well, I think the best practice, and I think their duty is to make sure it's in the best interest of the ward. Obviously, everybody wants to make sure that the ward is taken care of, and because the ward in this case had very serious injuries, and so that was paramount and contemplated in the language of the release. But obviously, it has happened down the line in the student transport case. It's separate that I've outlined the facts in my brief. They are using the Tadros opinion from 2007 from the court as a limitation or liability reduction in negotiations and as the litigation has proceeded.
So what did we say in Tadros with respect to a non-settling tortfeasor's credit, if you will?
There's usually, I think as I understand it, Your Honor, there's a reduction. That basically, it discusses joint and several liability and basically limits that liability, and there's a reduction there's basically a credit for that non-settling party.
Pro rata?
Yes.
Meaning what?
Basically, you look at the total amount of the damages, and there would be a pro rata, basically, deduction by percentage.
And who would determine, who's the fact finder on the percentage of negligence to be attributed to the potentially responsible parties?
Well, it would be the jury or the court, in this case the jury, that would be the fact finder.
There hasn't been a jury trial in the case against the transportation company.
There's not yet.
Correct? So you don't know what the percentages will be?
We don't.
How does that impact us here?
Well, what we were asking at the lower court was to vacate that original order to basically put all the parties back in the same place, because the settling party basically gave their limits, pitched their limits of all of their insurance proceeds. And so basically we offered at the county court level in our motion to vacate to put all the parties back in the same position by repaying the $250,000.
So let's back up just a little. You all went into the successor conservator, went into the county court a couple years later and said, not happy with the settlement, asking the county court judge to vacate it.
Correct.
Is that right?
That is correct.
And what would be the authority of the county court at that point in time?
Well, there's a few things, a few statutes.
Jurisdictional question.
Sure. It's all Chapter 25 related principles. And so Section 252720 grants county courts the power to vacate or modify their own judgments or orders during or after the term of which judgments were made in the same manner provided for in actions in the district court.
Provided for by what?
I'm sorry?
So it kind of says county courts can do this kind of like the district courts, but only but in the manner that is provided for by finished the sentence. District courts. What's the authority of the district court years later to do something in equity?
Well, there's a couple other sections I think that kind of weave all this together, so maybe I'll just finish that thought, Your Honor. So Section 252009 grants county courts general power to modify its own orders. And then finally, and kind of back up to Section 24517(3) grants county courts exclusive original jurisdictions of all matters as they relate to conservatorships.
So maybe on our path, we start there and we say in 24517, the county court has original exclusive jurisdiction of the conservatorship, right?
Correct.
But years later, does that apply to all this sequelae?
I'm sorry.
Does, years later, does the county court still have the authority under the statutes to deal with what you seek?
We submit to the court, yes.
It's outside the term, is that correct?
Absolutely.
So that provision's gone.
True.
So what is the applicable provision?
It's a balance of equities. I think that basically the best interests of the ward, we're trying to protect from the conservator's task and the court. Everybody wants to make sure that ward is taken care of for her long-term care.
So you're asking the court for a rescission of the agreement?
Absolutely. Well,
that's an equity, isn't it?
Yes, and I think...
So you're asked, several years later, you're asking the county court to do some equitable thing?
Yes.
Okay. And what subsection of the statute is that?
Now, Your Honor, or Chief, I think...
Subsection 2 deal with equity?
Yes.
So does the county court have equity jurisdiction or equity powers in this situation?
I think they do, Judge, because in essence, again, we have to ask the court for its approval of the original agreement in the first place, and since in that original order the court contemplated this subsequent tortfeasor settlements, I think that the equities balancing
typically, county courts don't have equity power under the Constitution, so they're created by statute. What statutory authority gives them equitable powers in this situation?
The ones I've talked about already, but I think in addition to that, Your Honor, again, best interest of the child is the key consideration when we get into equity.
I know your time has expired, but I want to ask you one more question about the statute that Judge Miller-Lerman asked you about, 25-2720.01, which the last phrase of which says, in the same manner as provided for actions filed in the district court. My question to you is the verb provided, or what is doing the providing?
Well, I think by our motion, I mean, we're laying out the equities of the case by filing our motion to vacate the order. So we are providing, same as we would in the district court.
Isn't it the statute that provides whatever authority that the county court has?
Yes, yes, Your Honor.
So it's the statute that's providing whatever the source of that authority is.
Yes.
Not the Constitution.
No.
The county courts don't have constitutional equity jurisdiction.
Correct, Your Honor. And just to finish that thought, the court's order of 2021 believed, and basically one of the last holdings of that order said that they did not have any way under Nebraska law to provide the relief that we were seeking.
What have we said about county courts' equitable powers?
Typically don't have equitable powers, but I guess can you be more specific?
Do we have talked about it in probate matters or things of that nature?
Yes, you have in many cases.
If the county court has that equitable power that you're arguing for, wouldn't we then have to review the balance of the equity? I mean, aren't you asking us to then review the balance of the equities and say, this motion should have been granted? And if so, how do we do that when we don't have a bill of exceptions with any evidence?
I think the remedy would be to send it back to kind of, again, go back and we could, if we undo the order and go back to the county court and have that stricken, that would be, we could create a record for the court.
Isn't that sort of giving you an opportunity that someone else that requested an appropriate record would not have?
Correct.
Chief, I know we're out of time on this. May I ask one more question?
You certainly may.
I'd like to explore briefly a premise that sort of underlies your request. In your brief, you suggested that if the court, if the county court judge had granted your motion and had vacated approval or authority to enter into this settlement agreement, that somehow the settlement agreement would just tumble. And you didn't cite any case law or statute for that proposition, and I wanted to give you an opportunity here, if you've got some authority, to tell us about it.
No specific authority, Judge, but as I explained, we provided to basically repay that settlement proceeds in full.
But the settlement has been accomplished, has it not? The consideration has been paid, the document has been signed?
Yes.
And what you're asking is to rescind, for an order to rescind that binding settlement agreement, correct?
I am.
Have we ever considered a case like that outside of a district court setting?
Not that I'm aware of, Judge, and I think that's why I'm here talking about it today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Walden, good morning to you again, and you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. It's great to see you here in three dimensions. I've been to Lincoln a few times and had Justice Miller Learman on a screen. And in the law school setting, this is a good case for them to be hearing because it has everything in it, in a way. It's civil procedure, freshman level jurisdiction. Where does authority come from? And I, was hearing the court, asking those sorts of questions. And by the way, I'm here for Davian Brewer, and basically taking 9 minutes of the 10. And if you have anything that you'd like to ask the Student Transportation Authority, lawyer after that, she's willing to get up here too. But so where does authority come from? Not the Constitution to do equitable things for the county court, as you've pointed out. The statute, well, 25, well, of course, the county court's ability to do anything after term is kind of kicked over into the what can the district court do, which is 25-2001. More than 6 months after the term, you can't do anything under the first subsection, so you look where else in the statute is it giving anybody authority to do something out of term, and more than 6 months. And there's a whole list in number four of that statute. None of those apply, and that was been conceded in the appellant's brief. So they're relying on subsection two, which only says equitable jurisdiction is not limited. Essentially it's saying if a court already has equitable jurisdiction, this statute doesn't limit that. Well, now we're back to what does the county court have equitable jurisdiction to do? Well, it can do equity within its core mission, which has to do with what's the best interest of the child and so forth. I think this is outside of that. This is rescission. It says absolutely. He's asking you to look into equity for rescission. Okay, well, what's the basis for that? I don't see any record that says that the court did anything wrong in denying this motion to vacate. I mean, there's no evidence. There was no evidence presented to the county court in 21. It was decided in 2022, but the motion was almost a year later, or maybe a year earlier than that. But so we have a 2017 order approving, that's all right for the conservator then to enter into a settlement from this car accident. 3.5 years later, they want to overturn it and do not present the settlement and release, don't present anything from the original hearing, don't present any new evidence like an affidavit from the lawyer at the time representing the guardian, representing Veronica.
If I may, given our situation here, we're on appeal, there's no bill of exceptions, right?
Yes.
But we may look at the transcript, correct?
Of course.
The pleadings, and some the pleadings kind of tell us what was on the appellant's mind, right?
Yes.
Looking to vacate the settlement order slash a rescission of the settlement slash release, right? And some affidavits, which may or may not have been presented, we don't know, right? So we kind of know what they want. by virtue of the transcript alone, right? So what would be the authority of the county court several years later to do that which the appellant seeks?
I don't think that the county court had authority to, you know, grant the motion, you know, whether, you know, looking into the merits of it or not, because it's just out of time. And there's no equity jurisdiction to do what they actually want is to rescind this settlement and release that was entered into, you know, to settle at least this aspect of the case for this particular, you know, well, alleged tortfeasor.
I want to circle back to your argument with respect to subsection 2 of section 25-2001. As I understand your argument, I don't think you used these precise words, but I think you're saying it does not confer any authority to any court whatsoever. It simply is saying we are not, we, the legislature, are not purporting to limit the constitutional authority of the district court.
Exactly. So the equity has to be within a whatever the court is, you know, jurisdiction to begin with.
So to circle further back to the statute that was first talked about, 25-2720.01, when we talk in the last phrase of that statute, were made in the same manner as provided for actions filed in the district court. Who or what does the providing for purposes of that statute? Is it the legislature in the other statutes?
Well, yeah, it would be if the legislature has to provide it if it's not there from the Constitution. And I don't believe that they did that.
Could that statute be referring to the Constitution?
Well, if it's not in the Constitution to begin with for county courts, I don't think the statute can confer, you know, that. I mean, I don't think the statute is purporting to confer that jurisdiction on a county court.
We have said that there's equity powers in the county court in certain proceedings, haven't we? Oh,
of course.
Where's that authority come from?
From the grant of authority over particular matters to the county court, such as in, you know, for a probate, a judge, you know, can decide the best interests of...
So if there's concurrent original jurisdiction in a county court and a district court, does that create the equitable powers?
I don't know that, you know, for something like the best interest thing, that there's a, that the district court has that jurisdiction, that's in the county court. But when you're carrying out, you know, your core authority, then you can look to equitable considerations to do so. And in fact, this judge did. And that's reflected in the order. I mean, if the criticism is, well, he thought he couldn't do equity, well, he did look at equity. He looked at, you know, she had the money for 3.5 years. And, you know, part of the whole consideration is she was in a car driven by my client who ran into the side of a bus.
But the county court did not purport to deny this on its merits, did it?
Did both. I mean, I don't think it, you know, the court even, you know, said, I don't have jurisdiction to decide this. Just kind of jumped into it, you know, and said, you know, that there is no fraud that was committed. There's no grounds for rescinding this, you know, this settlement and this release.
And when we have talked about a county court's powers within an action that lies within the original exclusive jurisdiction of a county court, we've talked about it applying equitable principles, haven't we?
That's right.
Is that the same thing as having general equity power?
I don't believe so. I believe, you know, if you have authority over a subject matter, you can, you know, use equitable principles within it, and I've read those things in the cases and, you know, researching this, but just, you know, getting into whole equitable, you know, things like, you know, undoing a, you know, say a lease, you know, just because it's involved with a divorce or something like that, I don't believe it has that sort of authority.
The statutes dealing with county court enforceable of settlements authorizes a court to approve or not approve a settlement, right?
That's right.
Does it provide any language that suggests the county court has the ability to undo a settlement that it has previously approved?
I think that would have to come under the ability, you know, under, you know, 25-2001, to go back and undo things, you know, generally. I don't think you can just, you know, inherently go back and say, oh, this didn't work out so well, we'll undo this settlement and throw everybody back into the litigation mix.
The conservator subject matter statutes don't talk about vacating settlement agreements.
No, I didn't see anything like that. You just get into the general, when and how can you vacate and for what reasons, and none of that applies.
So the operative motion here asked the county court judge to vacate the order approving the settlement agreement, correct?
Yes.
There, the discussion has been centering a lot on the conditions for rescinding the settlement agreement, but the relief requested was vacate the order approving the settlement agreement. So I want to explore with you briefly what effect, if any, vacating the order authorizing the conservator to settle, what would the effect of vacating that order be on a settlement which has already been executed and finalized?
Well, yeah, in that hypothetical of, you know, assuming that there was jurisdiction to do anything like that, it does seem to throw the settlement out.
You know, on what theory? On what legal basis? If somebody, if the head of a corporation enters into a settlement agreement and later somebody comes back and says that person's no longer the head of the corporation, what effect does it have on the settlement agreement?
I'm not so sure I can speak to your
example. That was a bad
analogy. But,
it was a bad analogy. What effect does the county court judge authorizing the conservator or not authorizing the conservator, what effect does that have on a settlement that has already been effectuated?
Well, looking at it from the point of view of before it's been effectuated, then it can't go forward. Now, rescinding the authority to do what already has been done would seem to violate, I mean, it, okay, we've approved you entering into the contract, you two, or at least we've approved this side of the, you know, this contracting party to go ahead and accept, you know, the contract. And now the court is going to undo the contract that has been entered into with the court's authority. There's where there's a jurisdictional problem, and you know, this hasn't been raised in the case. I'm, you know, wondering, can, is there a constitutional problem with, you know,
parties can ask to rescind. Parties can ask to rescind a contract, can they not?
Well, they can.
Equitable rescission of a contract, and that applies in settlement agreements, correct?
Yes.
Where are those actions filed? If somebody wants to rescind a contract that has already been signed and completed and the consideration has been paid and accepted and everyone's done that which they agreed to do, where do you file a action to rescind a binding contract?
I think you have to go to district court that has general jurisdiction over equity, because it is definitely an equitable, you know, action. And I believe I put down the quote, absolutely, when you're asking him, you know, is he asking for rescission under equity? I believe I've run out of my time. You know, if you have any questions for the other attorney.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure we have any time. Do we have any time remaining?
No, Your Honor.
We'll give you 2 minutes to say whatever you wish to say.
May it please the court. My name is Catherine Van Balen, and I am here on behalf of Appalee Student Transportation of Nebraska, Inc. In this case, the interests of the Appalese are aligned. We are aligned in interests, we are aligned in positions, and we are aligned in arguments, so I would be respectful of the court's time and join in all the arguments made by co-appalese. I'm certainly welcome questions if there are any.
The appellant argued that you should not have been permitted to file an amicus brief through your client, correct?
It is correct that the appellant did raise that argument. With respect, this goes back to the lack of the bill of exception and the limited transcript in this case. Before the court, there's not any evidence as to what was considered by the county court in deciding whether or not to file the amicus brief. The motions aren't there. There's briefing done also on that, and those are not before the court.
Is it proper to characterize what was filed as an amicus brief, or was it more along the lines of intervention?
At the time, I believe that it was correct to do the amicus brief because we are not directly part of the settlement agreement, but as the interests have evolved in this case and as they are now pursuing further litigation against my client, it is in the form of an interpleader action. Thank you for your time. I respectfully request that the decision of the County Court of District Court of Douglas County be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. We've taken a little extra time here, Mr. Carney. If you want a minute for rebuttal, we'll give that to you. Very good. Counsel, then, that concludes arguments in In Re Guardian and Conservatorship of Veronica B. So you are excused. You can stay around if you wish, but you may also leave.